Blog Talk Radio.
Our third episode of Common Ties Live. Sorry about that, guys. A little technical difficulty there with the music. Our show is delayed about 30 seconds. We are on the air. It's 11:01 in the evening here in Washington, D.C. We are joined by our amazing co-host on Common Ties Live. DJ Hunter is in Washington, D.C. with us tonight. How are you feeling tonight, DJ?
I am feeling wonderful. How are you doing?
I am doing well. was dealing with a little bit of a cold last week, but I got through it. So I'm feeling good. Another Monday night in the 11 o'clock hour, late night pillow talk hour. Good to be here with everybody. We also have August Leo Rain calling out of North Carolina. How are you feeling tonight, Mr. August?
I'm feeling fabulous.
Wonderful. Antonio Drivers in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania tonight, keeping it sexy for us, I hope. How are you tonight, Antonio?
I'm great, great. Really excited about tonight.
Excited. And I'm seeing Alex in Wonderland just wrote in our chat room, yes, for the Noah's Ark theme song. We see you, Alex. Loving you in Pittsburgh as well. And Ramon Gadd is holding it down in South Jersey tonight. How are you, Ramon?
I'm feeling good. A little bit tired. You know, it's past my bedtime.
We are happy that you are with us and you are holding down Twitter. You know, tonight's show is a bit different than some of the other shows that we've done before. We are talking about some serious subject matter. We're talking about domestic violence and rape and how it's happening in the gayborhood. We have a special guest that's going to be on the show with us tonight. That's actually already on the show with us, I should say, and we'll get to that in a moment. And we're going to open up the phone lines, as we usually do, to talk to different people who have experienced domestic violence and rape. But I want to read some statistics for you as we kick off this conversation tonight on our very, very serious subject matter. The stats on domestic violence in homosexual culture came from the National Violence Against Women survey, and I actually put the links to the website that this information was sourced from in the Common Ties group. So if you want to read these articles, I highly suggest you go into the group and read them. Basically, what the survey found was that 21.5% of men and 35.4% of women, and these are same gender loving men and women, experienced in homosexuality, if there's such a thing, but I'm reading verbatim from the study. They actually experience intimate partner physical violence in their lifetime. So again, 21.5% of men and 35.4% of same gender loving men and women, so gay and lesbian women, have experienced intimate partner physical violence in their lifetimes. And that's in comparison to 7.1% of men and 20.4% of women, respectively, with a history of only opposite sex cohabitation. And transgender respondents had an incidence of 34.6% over a lifetime, according to the Massachusetts survey. The CDC's 2010 National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey, which was released in 2013, came out with some new analysis. And it was the first ever study focusing on the victimization of sexual orientation and lifetime prevalence of rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner. And that percentage was 43.8% for lesbians, 61.1% for bisexual women, and 35% for heterosexual women, while it was only 26% for gay men, 37.3% for bisexual men, and 29% for heterosexual men. So I'll tell you guys that who are listening and are co-hosting our show tonight, that the most domestic violence cases in the United States of America happen in the gay community. And so I want to dive right into this tonight. Our special guest tonight, for all of you that are listening and many of you that are just joining us around the country, our phone lines are buzzing right now with a lot of people, is DJ Hunter. And DJ and I had a chance to chat last week and kind of talk a little bit about his experience of domestic violence. And so, DJ, if you can just open up to us and tell us your story. So this is an intimate portrait. This is a safe space. There's no judgment here, no preconceived notions. But we want you to open up with us tonight on Common Ties Live about what your experience has been like with domestic violence. And I give the floor to you.
All right. I know some people are probably surprised hearing that, hello, I'm the special guest. As Tristan stated, I don't look at myself as a victim, but I have experienced domestic violence in the dating relationship world. Literally 1 week, 7 days before I graduated from college in May 2010, I was involved with a gentleman that I was getting to know very deeply. And we got into a very heated discussion where it ended up with me, I feel like it was my fault still to this day, that I did a little baby tap on his hand in the front seat of my car to tell him to stop touching my radio as I was driving. Actually in a parking lot. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this guy that I met that was articulate, sweet, was just this big, huggable giant that was a man of God, proceeded to wrap his hands around my throat and lift me up out of my driver's seat and put me in between the front seat and the back seat of my car and choked me to the point where I actually blacked out. And I blacked out for maybe 5 seconds, and what woke me up was him driving his fist into the left side of my face as he was choking me. And I don't remember how many times he hit me, but it was enough that my face was damaged, damaged to the point where I had abrasions on my face. I had, of course, bruises.
Take your time. Take your time, honey.
yeah, it was very surreal. I know for me, I was always thinking that I would never be the one to allow a man that I was interested in to even put their hands on me, because I'd be the first one to say, nigga, you touch me, I'm going to cut you, I'm going to do something, you know, this, that, and the other. And it was reality hitting that,
right.
Wow, you never really know somebody. So, yeah.
Well, we thank you for your bravery. We thank you for telling that story. I wanted to start with some preliminary questions about the experience. You know, as we just established, based on the statistics, domestic violence is very prevalent in the gay community. And we're seeing increased cases and very high percentages of these cases coming out in our community. You know, I think the first question tonight would be, where were you mentally when you were being beaten by this man?
I was in a place of shock and disbelief, because And I'm sorry if I'm sorry to you all that are listening if my voice sounds off. I'm sitting here. I really don't even want to be having this conversation. But I was in a state of shock and disbelief because this was somebody that I met through a really good friend of mine. And my friend and I, we laughed and talked about, oh my gosh, he's so sweet and da-da-da-da-da, you know, all of that type of stuff. And, you know, it was, I still can't believe it to this day that I even went through that because, again, all I can say is I was shocked and I could not believe it. Like, I could not believe it. I still can't even really put it into words except for I cannot believe that happened.
Now, what we're learning from many people that have been in situations of domestic violence is that they oftentimes blame themselves. And in many of the interviews that I've done for this show tonight, I learned from a lot of the people that were the victims, like yourself, that they felt as if they could have avoided it, like maybe if I didn't provoke him. Did you ever feel like you could have avoided this beating?
Yes. To this day, 5 years later, 5 years this past May, I still feel like I am solely to blame for everything that happened that night. I was always taught that, you know, keep your hands to yourself. Don't hit nobody unless you expect to get hit back. But what got me was that I can understand if somebody were... Again, like I said, I admit wrong. This gentleman, he reached for my radio in my car, and literally I gave him like a little tap that you would give like a little kid just to tell him stop. That's all it was. And I feel like if I just would have kept my hands to myself and I would have used my words, I never would have ended up, you know, with this man's fingerprints on my throat. I never would have dealt with, you know, those blows to the face. I never would have dealt with anything. I feel like if I wouldn't have done anything to provoke him, things would not have escalated like that.
So this took place in your car.
Yes.
Did he flee the scene afterwards, or did you remain in the car? Did you go somewhere with him?
Yes, this did happen in my car. It was actually, for those of you that live in Maryland, I was sitting on 198 in Laurel, Maryland at the 7-Eleven next to Home Depot. And we were in the parking lot and we had this argument. And it was so funny that maybe a few feet away, there was a Prince George's County police officer. And this dude was so bold that he stayed in my car. And when I threatened to open the door to want to scream for help, he actually threatened to kill me if I wouldn't have driven him home. So after getting my ass beat, I had, out of fear of my life, I had to drive this monster home. And I will never, ever forget that ride.
Let me ask you this, DJ, and you tell us if you need a moment, and we can have some callers call in if you want to take a break. What was the car ride like? You know, as I take it, you were in the driver's seat, bloody and beaten. What was that car ride like? I'm sorry, my voice is kind of trembling as I'm asking these questions because this is such a chilling story. But what was the car ride like?
We can keep going, and this is something that needs to be shared. And I'm not gonna give that monster the satisfaction of even shedding any more tears about this 5 years later. Riding with that monster for about 15 minutes was filled with me being who I am, you know, who I can be at times, very dramatic, because the whole ride to his house, I was just like. I kept saying, oh, my God, nigga, you really did just do this shit to me. Like, how you gonna do this to me? I was like, My mom and dad are going to be here in 5 days. I'm getting ready to graduate. You done fucked up my face. I cannot believe you have fucked up my face. Really? And that's all I could keep saying to keep myself from actually doing the worst thing that I could have thought about doing, which was possibly killing both of us in the car.
Right.
I actually, while I was taking him home, we had to cross a bridge. And I, for a slight 5 seconds, I thought about just doing a sharp right while we got on this bridge, just doing a sharp right turn and just ending it right there, and hopefully him getting the whole blunt force of it because he was in the right side, he was in the passenger side. And if I had to go down, that was fine and dandy, because I wanted that nigga to go the fuck down.
Right. So in the aftermath of this entire ordeal, I know that you recovered. I know that there was some concerns about your physical appearance. When you saw your physical appearance the first time, what was your reaction?
The first time I saw my physical appearance, when I got home that evening, I don't remember really going into a mirror. I do remember going into a mirror, and I remember looking, and I was numb. I couldn't cry. I was more mad than anything. But what I did was, when I first got home, I called my best friend of over 10 years, and she came running. And I called my friend that introduced me to the monster, and I cried when my best friend opened the door and she attempted to touch my face. And I remember falling on the floor and just crying and just being like, why did it, just wanting to know why did it happen, and her wanting to hug me. And after she hugged me for a little bit, I remembered pushing away from her. And that's my best friend, who's like my sister. And then when my other friend came over, he wanted to touch me. I wouldn't even let him touch me. I went through a little state that after that, I didn't want any man to touch me. It took me a minute to want to even let a man even just hug me. Any of my male friends, just to let them hug me, because I had been violated to the worst degree by somebody that I trusted.
Right. I want to open up the phone lines now and pull in some callers to hear about some other experiences and just open up the dialogue and get some other voices on the line. But before we do that, what can victims of rape and domestic violence do after their experience? So particularly, let's just say domestic violence, because we haven't gotten to the subject of rape yet. But what can they do? What did you do in this situation? Did you go to the police? Did you go to a victim's advocacy group? What support did you have, and what's available to victims of domestic violence?
I, with my best friend at my side, I called 911. The police officers came, they looked at me, and they were like, you need to go fill out, you know, this is what you can do. You can go fill out, you know, a report. We can go get this guy pulled in. We can, you know, do this, that, and the other. So I reluctantly, and I was forced by my best friend, and I love her to this day for this. She pushed me to get in that car with her.
Okay, real quick, I have a question. Actually, one of our viewers has a question.
Hang on one moment, Ramon. Are you okay, DJ? Yeah, we might have lost DJ, guys. go ahead with your, hang on, I think we, DJ, are you still with us? I'm sorry, I think we lost you for a moment. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we lost you for a moment, but we got you back. But you were saying, I'm sorry, we didn't see the last part of what your statement was.
I was just saying that my best friend helped me go to the police station and file a report. We did charges. They brought the guy in. They released him. And then he and I went to court. And the protection order was extended. And then the last time we were supposed to go to get the protection order extended again, he actually did not show up, and come to find out, he ran. So right now, currently, according to Maryland K-Search, good old Maryland K-Search, the monster still has an open warrant out for his arrest in the state of Maryland. So I'm hoping that son of a bitch decides to apply for a job or something, and he finds out he has an open warrant for his arrest. Still, 5 years later.
We're gonna take a Twitter question, Ramon. Who has a question for us from Twitter?
We have a question from Josh. He wants to know, was this the first time of him being abusive to you? And did you see any signs before this of any abuse?
You said his name is Josh?
Yes.
Josh, thank you for asking that. Josh, to be honest with you, this was the very first time that any man had physically assaulted me like that, that I was in a domestic relationship with, or that I was dating, actually. We were actually dating. We weren't even full-fledged in a relationship. There were no signs that this guy had the type of capacity to do this to anybody, especially me. When I met him through a nonprofit group in the District of Columbia in D.C. He was very charismatic. He was a great speaker. He, again, a man of God, he opened my eyes and he touched me with his words. That's how passionate he was about the things that he spoke about. So, and that's what attracted me to him. But no, there was no type of indication. And mind you, before this incident even happened, I had been actively getting to know him for several months. I want to say over 3 months.
Wow. We're going to open the phone lines now. We have a caller, Brandon, calling out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Brandon is known as BD Brooks in our group. Brandon, you are on the air. How are you this evening, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Tristan. How about yourself?
I am well. Well, welcome to the show. Such deep subject matter at 11:22 in the evening here on the East Coast. And so, Brandon, you just heard DJ's really, really touching and compelling story about how he survived domestic violence and was able to, fight back by going to the police, and his abuser is still at large. Have you ever had any experiences directly with domestic violence that you can share with us?
I did. This was back when I was around 22 or 23. I had met this guy, we were dating, and one night we were at his mother's house celebrating something. I don't really remember, but we were drinking, and by the end of the night, he was pretty intoxicated and wanted to drive home. So I told him, I said, you know, you're a little bit too drunk to drive. You know, why don't you let me drive home? And he put up a fight, and I said, well, listen, I'm not getting in the car with you because you could kill me and kill yourself. So he finally, you know, gave me the keys so I can drive home. So we're in the car, we're driving, and he's just going off and off, you know, about the fact that I wasn't going to get in the car with him. And I said, man, just stop bitching, you know what I mean? And as soon as I said that, the next thing I know, he caught me on the right side of my face. And of course, my immediate reaction, somebody hits you, you know, you're going to hit back. So we're in the car. The car is still in park. The car is still in motion, you know, fighting, you know what I mean? So I eventually got the car pulled over and the fight spilled into the street. And I think some bystanders had broke it up or something like that. But I still didn't leave. You know, I told myself, I said, well, you know, if I never said the word bitch to him, you know, and he probably would have never hit me because he just hates that word and blah, 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 blah. So we're going to fast forward about a week after that incident. I was off and didn't have to go to work. So he went to work. When he came back home, I was actually in the shower, you know, showering or whatever. And he came in, and it's a little embarrassing, but he asked me, he said, did you masturbate today? And I said, yeah, I did. You know, you were at work. So, I felt a little horny, so I took care of myself. He didn't say anything else. He went into the bedroom. So I finished my shower, and I was drying off. And as I walked into the bedroom, the next thing I know, there was an iron flying across the room at my head. And that's when it clicked to me. I said, you know what? No, I have to get out of the situation. So.
How did you feel, you know, this is someone that you're dating, this is someone that you're intimate with. How did you feel in that moment when the first situation happened? Like, did you, I mean, were there any warning signs? Like, tell us, you know, what happened, you know, did anything happen beforehand leading up to this, or were there any warning signs? Let's just start with that question.
Well, come to think about it, he was a fighter. He loved to fight. I would, you know, when we were out, I would be always trying to keep him from cussing somebody out or trying to, you know, do something to somebody because he felt disrespected. But I never thought he'd be directed towards me, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I guess, but like I said, I was 22, 23. I was young. I was immature. I didn't really put the signs together. All I know is that I had a boyfriend, yeah.
Right. And so during the second altercation, I mean, it really, you know, was somewhat different from the first one. So why leave the second time? Why not leave the first time?
Well, again, I was immature. The first time it happened, I blamed myself for it because I said, stop bitching. And he said, you know, when I heard that, you know, when I heard that word, I just lost it and dot, 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 this and, you know, X, Y, Z. So I blame myself, you know, and that's why I didn't leave.
Mm-hmm. Antonio has a question for us this evening. Antonio, one of our fabulous panelists in the same state as you, Brandon, in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Antonio.
Well, I just wanted to know, like, because this is obviously somebody you loved. I mean, how was it getting out of it? Was it like how hard was it for you to just like completely walk away? Because apparently this wasn't the first time that you guys had an altercation.
Well, after having the iron come at my head, it wasn't hard for me at all to wash my hands of the situation. So I was out. The next day, I was out. I was done with him. I told him, do not call my phone. I don't want to see you. I'm done. Completely.
So right. So my question, like, was that the first time that he had...
Yes, that was the first time that he had ever put his hands on me.
Okay. Brandon, where does someone go from here? So you've had two experiences in a relationship relative to domestic violence. I understand that you are in a wonderful relationship right now. Am I correct to say it's been 2 years now that you've been with your boyfriend?
Yes, it has been.
Okay. So where do you go from here? So are you and your boyfriend having a great relationship? Are things well? Are there any, you know, issues with domestic violence, or you guys are kind of just in love and happy?
Well, no relationship is perfect, you know, and we're learning more and more about each other as the days go by. I'm not going to say everything is peachy, but, you know, you learn to first communicate with each other. You learn to listen to each other, and if there's a situation where things are getting heated, I've learned to walk away from the situation and let things die down and then come back and try to revisit it.
Right. Brandon, I would just like to say thank you for calling into the show tonight at this late hour. I know you stayed up a little extra to kind of hang out with us. We really, really appreciate you for telling your story and your bravery. And we wish you and your boyfriend of 2 years much love, happiness, and success. So I'm going to put you back in queue, and we're going to take the next Twitter question. Thank you, Brandon. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
All right, Ramon, we have a question from Twitter. Ramon, are we ready with our question?
Yes, we have a question for DJ, actually. Do you think there's anything like we can do to come together to try to track this guy down, or?
I honestly, whoever asked the question, thank you for asking that, and I really appreciate that. Honestly, I don't know. I really don't know how what can be done to facilitate having the monster, because I don't call this person, you know, he's not a person. I don't know what I can do to get this monster, you know, taken in by the police in Maryland. Last that I heard, the monster was living in, I think, either Atlanta or Chicago. So somebody that I knew in D.C. knew where he was, but this was like maybe 2 years ago when that person told me that. So, but again, I really don't know what I could do.
Right. Let me ask you a question. At 5 years post this situation, do you even have the energy at this point to say, I want to go after this guy, or, you know, I want him to be found? I mean, where are you in terms of him being captured and prosecuted by to the fullest extent of the law?
I kind of feel like, well, this is something that, well, I think we talked about this last week. You and I talked about this last week. I kind of feel like what gets me through the day is knowing that, you know, if this man ever wanted to have, like, a top secret security clearance, guess what, bitch? You can't get one. You got a warrant. So I do love the fact that I'm kind of karma is constantly showing up and rearing her beautiful head in this man's life because of what he did. And for me, it may sound juvenile, but to me, that's kind of like the ultimate revenge. You can't do anything in life with an open warrant. You can't, for instance, you can't be a licensed healthcare professional in most jurisdictions with an open warrant out for your arrest. You can't have a top secret security clearance. You probably can't even have a low security clearance with a warrant out for your arrest. If you step foot in the state of Maryland and you get a speeding ticket, your ass is getting hauled away because you ducked and dodged Maryland police officers for over 5 years. Dude is looking at some time right now.
Right.
As soon as he steps back into Maryland. So
my question for you was, do you know where he fled to? I mean, do you know what city he can possibly be in? Are there any leads?
Again, the last time I talked to anyone about it, about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, the last that I heard, he was either in Chicago or he was in Atlanta. So, I mean, that's it. I haven't even, and to be honest with you, I probably could find out for myself, because I actually still have him blocked on my Facebook, and it's scary that every time if I go look on my block list, I see his name, and all I see is just red, and I can't get myself to unblock him and find it for myself, because even though I know he is not in this area, to my knowledge, I'm still scared shitless of him.
Right.
5 years later,
right.
I am still scared of him. I personally, and I will share this, and then, you know, we can go into the next question if need be. 5 years later, I still deal with this. I live by myself, but I'm scared. I'll just say it that way. 5 years later, living by myself, I'm scared. There are times where I feel like I cannot close my eyes and I cannot go to sleep in pitch black dark because I'm afraid that this monster, I'll see this monster's face. Right. 5 years later. But I
want to
say to help me get. Oh.
Go ahead. No, finish your thought.
And
finish
I was going to say just really quick. And I was just going to say really quickly, to help me get over this, I will admit I have been working with a therapist to help me get over that fear because I refuse to let this monster ruin my life and run my life 5 years from now. I mean, another 5 years from now.
Right. I want to open up the phone lines. We have a caller calling out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Anthony is actually the caller calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. He's a member of our group. And as we talk about fear, I think that Anthony's story can possibly help us understand DJ's fear a little bit more. Those of us who have never experienced domestic violence. Anthony, you are on the line. Good evening and welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for being brave and coming on with us. It's 11:36 in the evening on Monday night on Common Ties Live. It's Tristan Kier. We've got DJ Hunter. We've got Antonio Driver, Ramon Gaddis, and we have August Leo Rain on the panel this evening. And another one of our callers, Anthony, whose story I am familiar with tonight. We want you to just talk to us about what your experience has been like with domestic violence, and particularly the fear base, because I know that there were some issues that you had with fear. So I'm going to open the floor up for you to tell us your story.
Okay. Well, I was introduced to this guy back in 2007. I was really young. I was like 19, approaching 20. And I was introduced through my cousin, which was a friend of the guys. And he used to have like these little Friday night gatherings or whatever. So I had went up there once with my cousin. And, you know, he kind of took an interest. So we began communicating from there on out. Never would have thought in a million years just from talking to him and interacting with him that, you know, it would turn out, or he would turn out to be that kind of person. Well, as time progressed, we talked for a while, and then it eventually led into a relationship. The first time that I ever was abused by him was he had these Friday night gatherings, and he sang, and I did as well. So he used to have, like, a lot of friends and colleagues and stuff over, like, drinking and little hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that. So I was all, like, just dressed up and stuff. You know, I had just began to grow my dreads at that time. You know, everything was kind of fresh. So he, you know, as the night went on, he had ran into the bathroom as if he had to throw up, as if he had to vomit. And he was leaning over the toilet. And I kind of ran in behind him about to cut on the light. And he was like, no, don't cut on the light. Don't cut on the light. It's good. Just close the door. So I'm like, well, you're going to miss the toilet. And he was like, no, I'm good. I got it. So I'm closing the door, trying to, you know, guide myself through this dark bathroom. And as soon as I get close, like, to touch his back, you know, to rub his back or whatever, he just, like, pop up and just threw his hands around my neck and threw him against the wall. And these exact words he said, like, bitch, go in there, take some clothes off, tie your hair up, and stop smelling these people's face. So I went in the room, and I saw where he had already laid out some gray sweatpants and this big, big white T-shirt. In this little tie that I wrapped my hair up with, that I did at that time. And I did it. I'm not a person of, like, to draw a lot of attention and stuff, so I did it, and I went back out there gracefully. Everybody looked at me like, you know, why are you changing? And that sort of thing. Well, you must be getting ready for bed. So that's the story that I stuck with. I agreed with him. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm a little tired or whatever. So went to bed. But, you know, a couple months down the road, we had got into it again, and this man, like, beat me out of all of my clothes. I mean, stripped me naked, beating me, to the point where I had to grab a duffel bag and run to the neighbor's house and throw on something, you know what I'm saying, just to get away. But the you know, even throughout time, it was just it was constant. But the final situation, he was in the shower, and so like I had had my little bands and stuff, and I was like, you know, I'm just tired. I'm just tired of this. I don't have to go through this. So I was sitting on the end of the bed waiting on him to get out the shower. Okay, so he gets out the shower, and he walks over to his desk in the room. And I was like, I need to talk to you for a minute. And so we began to talk, and I was just basically telling him that I think, you know, we should be friends. I sacrificed a lot for this relationship, and I don't feel like it's equivalent. You know, I don't, it's not mutual. And he listened. He was like, okay, I understand. And as soon as he got up, he was walking out of the room. But I wasn't even paying attention. He had bought up his seat and just kind of struck me dead in the face. You know, and at that time, I had just had enough because it had happened so much. We were together for 2 years, so it had happened so much throughout the course of those 2 years. And I don't know where I had, but I got this big-ass butcher's knife. And I just ran and started, like, stabbing through the bathroom door because he had ran, like, stuff in the bathroom. So I was stabbing through the bathroom door. I just dropped the knife, and I just stopped. I was like, you know, it's not even worth it. I'm going to just leave, and I'm going to go in peace. I had called my godbrother at the time, and he was in the area, and he had came through. And I just fell in his arms, just crying and telling what happened. So he then comes out the bathroom, my head, like crying and stuff, saying, I really fucked up. I'm sorry. Da, 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 da. And, you know, all I can remember screaming at him was like, love don't hurt. Love don't hurt, you know. And after that, you know, I just left and I never looked back.
So a question that's just been posed from Twitter, and Ramon, you want to read it out loud for us so everybody can hear it?
Right now, like, do you think that it's more, well, for me, I don't think it depends, like, on your position, but you think it's more of, like, bottoms getting abused, or is it both tops and bottoms, or?
I think it can happen, you know, either way. I think it can go either way. It just depends on the person. It just depends on the person.
I also agree with Anthony that I think that it doesn't matter what role you're in. It can happen to anybody.
Absolutely. Go right ahead, Anthony.
What DJ was saying earlier, I was so fearful. You know what I'm saying? I was so fearful, but yet in love with this man that, you know, I found myself in a dangerous place. Once I got out of it and I began to look back over my life, and I just saw things differently, and I was like, I was in such a dangerous place that I loved this man so much to the point, like, it didn't matter what he done to me. He probably could have threw a pot of hot scorching oil on me and, you know, could have gave me, like, burns and stuff, but I wouldn't have done anything bad to hurt him because I loved that man just that much. I felt that I could endure anything that he could have done to me. But I didn't want to see him hurt. And that was a dangerous place for me to be in at the time. And I didn't even realize it, you know, until afterwards.
After you guys broke up, Anthony, did you ever see this man anywhere out in public or have any other communication or contact with him?
Yeah. Well, he was calling me, like, giving me hate messages. You know, like, first he was begging for me, you know, to come back. And I was like, no, I'm done. So after he really saw that I was really, really done with this relationship, he began to call me and just give me hate messages like, I hate you, I'm going to kill you, and your family never find your remains, and da 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 da. So, you know, I changed my phone number. Everyone that, even my cousin that hooked us up, everyone that was affiliated with him, I detached myself. You know, I cut everybody out, you know. So, a year and a half, 2 years down the line, I had began singing background for this R&B artist, and I had got back in touch with my cousin. You know, by that time, I was good. I was over him. So I got back in touch with my cousin, and he was like, well, are you still in the area? And I was like, yes. So I met him at a restaurant. And to my surprise, it was everyone there that used to be at the Friday Night Gathering. So when they saw me, they just, like, screamed and yelled. They were very happy to see me. Okay, and he was there. So I'm walking in, you know, like, I'm on some Whitney Houston type stuff or whatever, like, bump this nigga, I'm the shit tonight. So I walked in, and Everybody was greeting me, and he stood up. He stands up, and he says, "I have a question. I have a question to ask everyone. You know, I'm just looking back, trying to figure out what he's gonna say." And he says, "Have you ever, like, look back up your life and you see some of your exes, and you ever be like, what the hell was I thinking for dating him?" He was like, "I'm looking at him saying, what the hell was I'm thinking? Was I thinking for letting him get away, for letting him leave me?" And everybody was like, well, he had a date there with him. So I was like, well, and this dude was getting, like, very aggressive. So I was like, well, listen, I didn't come to break up anyone's party. I just came to see, show my face. I didn't even know he was going to be here, so I just got up and I left. On my way out the door, he stopped me and was like, "Can I walk you to your car, da-da-da-da?" And I was like, you have a date that you need to entertain. So he ended up walking me to my car, and I got in the car, and he was like, "Can I have your number? Maybe we can try this again." And I was like, "No, I'm fine." And I said, "Thank you," and left.
Wow. I mean, what a great story of bravery.
I do have one question, Tristan.
Yeah. Go right ahead,
Antonio. So what is some advice you could give some of the listeners to prevent this situation from – or continuing to stay in the situation from your experience?
You have to first discover self-love. That's what I didn't have. I was looking for love from anyone that would give me love. You know what I'm saying? And then he showed me that. He showed me love. He showed me affection. But I didn't, I wasn't getting that for myself. I wasn't loving myself. And when you begin to love yourself, when you learn to love yourself, as we need to say, it is the greatest love of all. You know what I'm saying? Because no one else loves to supersede the love that you have for yourself. So then you won't allow anyone to hurt you. You won't allow anyone to harm you because you love yourself just that much. It's not to say that you don't love yourself now, but that's just something that you have to grow, you know what I'm saying, into. Because that's something that I had to do. And that I end up, you know, my bravery, and you know, after that, I was just like, they're like, "Man, this dude probably can go in the street now and just do box it out." You know what I'm saying? Because I ain't even there anymore.
Right. Well, Anthony, we thank you for coming on the show tonight. We thank you for your bravery and your honesty. And just know that, you know, all of us here at Currently Paused, we support you and all of the other persons that have called in tonight to tell their stories, just really brave and heroic. And we're happy to know that you're in a really, really great place. So we're going to put you back in queue, and thank you for calling in tonight.
Thank you.
We're going to go in a different direction tonight. We're going to pull in a caller from New York City. This topic is going to take a very interesting angle, because we're going to talk to someone in a caller out of New York City who actually has been not in the role of that of the abused, but in the role of that of the abuser. So Devin is joining us live in New York City tonight. Devin, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm good, Tristan. Thank you for the invite. And hello, everyone.
And we thank you. We thank you for your bravery. I know that when you came forward last week in the group and you said that you've actually been the person that's been the abuser before, I think we were all stunned. And I don't think many of us were stunned initially by the admission of the fact that you've been an abuser, but probably more so stunned by your bravery and the willingness to tell your story. So we're going to open the floor up for you now so that you can talk a little bit about what your experience has been like as someone who has been in several relationships and has physically abused their partners. And we want everybody to know that this is a safe space. We want you to be open. And, you know, it's a saying that goes, there's three sides to every story, yours, mine, and the truth. And we absolutely wanted to bring in someone who's on the opposite side of the spectrum of what we've heard tonight. So, Devin, tell us your story.
Okay, well, it started at a rather young age. First, let me start out by saying that in 15 days, I will turn 50. This started around the age of 23, 24 with my first lover. I had never been willingly been in a gay relationship. Because most of my life I've been bisexual, so to speak. I know people who don't like that term a lot, you know, but I like women just as well as I like men, you know. So this was my first gay relationship. And it was a lot that I was not prepared for emotionally, not just the fact of love, but the fact of dealing with who I was and my past. You know, I am a survivor of sexual abuse and physical abuse. So a lot of that started to manifest itself in this initial relationship. And I found myself acting out due to my inability to effectively communicate with my partner. I would always get tongue-tied. I was confused with the emotions. I was an utter mess. So as opposed to trying to, you know, I was not a talking person. If, you know, we never could have an argument. You said what you had to say, and I punched you in the face. And, you know, I'm sorry. And, you know,
take your time. We are here with you, and we appreciate your bravery. There are many people that are on the phone with us tonight that are hearing Devin's story. We're going to give Devin a moment because we understand it's hard, you know, to talk on you know, a platform like this about something as deep as domestic violence. And we understand that, you know, such a painful past can result in a beautiful future, particularly when you're willing to tell and open up about your story. So we are with Devin. We're going to give Devin a moment.
I'm okay. I can go on. I just really thought, like, you know, when we were talking early, and I realized, you know, it's been a long road, but it's been one that was necessary in terms of, you know, learning more about myself, learning how to deal, how to communicate, how to be that partner. And all I ever want to be to this day, no matter who I'm with, is the best partner I could possibly be. And, you know, even though at times it's challenging, I persevere and I keep on. And I use the tools that I've learned, that I've acquired, to deal, you know, because no one deserves to be hit. No one deserves to be physically or verbally abused. And, you know, there's also, you know, economic abuse. There's so many different types of abuse. And, you know, I've been on that end. I'm sitting here realizing that, you know, I've done all. I've been verbally abusive, physically abusive, and economically abusive. I would never allow my partners to, you know, I wanted them to solely depend on me, because it gave me a level of control. No.
You know, Devin, we had when I sat down and interviewed for the show, you know, I will say it was very hard to listen to your story. You know, and I've been in this line of business for almost 10 years now, and I've heard so many different people's stories, and but to listen to a gay man tell his story in the manner in which you told me your story was very emotional for me. I think the one thing that really, really was hard to hear was the sexual abuse and the physical abuse by your stepfather. You know, and talking to you and taking notes, you know, it was very, very, very chilling for me. And I'm trying to hold it together as I'm, you know, talking about our interview and the fact that when you told me that your stepfather tied you up and stripped you naked and tied you up and beat you with a bamboo stick, that really broke my heart. And I want to talk a little bit about the abuse that you suffered as a child. You know, I know that and we can stop at any moment to take a break. But I know that you said that your mom sent for you when she remarried. What was that environment like for you? What did you experience coming out of your mouth? What did you experience?
Well, in the words of my therapist, lost in abandonment. You know, I was taken out of a familiar and comfortable situation and put in an unfamiliar situation, because basically I was raised by my
my grandmother, because my mother was living in Europe at the time, pursuing her career. So when she moved back to the States, she wanted to be a mother. She wanted to be a wife. So she met a musician. They got married, and they sent for the kids. You know, mind you, I'm an only child. So, you know, it was horrific for me leaving my grandmother, you know, and coming into this situation with, you know, this man that, you know, that from the door, I just felt something that was wrong, you know. And, you know, he was abusive to my mother, and I had to watch that. And the first time I did something, you know, my mother put me right back in the situation, you know, because we were living between two homes, and, you know, he abused her at one home, and I ran and called the cops, and they came, they made them take a walk, because back then, I guess they still do it, they make you take a walk, and they ask someone to leave or do this, that, and the other. So the next day, he calls my mom, I guess he apologized, you know, which is funny, because as an abuser, I realized it's the same story. Oh, baby, I'll never do it again. I was just upset. Oh, you know how much I love you. You know, you mean more to me than anything. I promise I'll never do it again. And for some reason, you know, the majority will take that line and sinker and be like, oh, baby, I know. I know I shouldn't have done this. You know? And, you know, I have an issue with that. With that I should have done this. You know? And I heard... I'm going to need the dog to... And I heard someone earlier say that they felt it was their fault. No, it's never fault. I don't care what the circumstances, no one has the right to put their hands on you. Over a radio dial?
Right.
That was their issue, not yours.
In terms of your sexual abuse, you were sexually abused at age 7 years old. When you were physically beating your partners, were you physically beating your stepfather, or were you physically beating your sexual abusers?
Truthfully, I think I was beating everyone. I had so much frustration and anger in me, you know, and not being able to articulate what was going on in me, because I kept everything inside of me for so long. It wasn't until I was 25 that I ever told, you know, anyone what happened. You know, I told my son's mother, my first girlfriend, you know, at the age of 19, what I had endured, you know, and she stuck by me to the point when I told her that I need experience, you know, what's going on with this other thing, because, you know, I'm willingly finding men attractive, you know, and she understood, and we moved forward. But to answer your question, yes, I think it was just a combination of everything. I just wanted to, it was an outlet, you know, and to a point, addictive.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know?
That's the first time I've ever heard an abuser say that it was an addiction, because abuse is an addiction, particularly when you're immune to it. We have a question from Twitter tonight. Ramon, can you present Devin with that question?
Yes. Devin, do you think you were abusive because your partner seemed weaker?
Okay, well, first let me give you a little background. And even to this day, and I know there's a red flag for everyone listening, but I'm 6'2" and I'm 180 pounds. I would not date anyone that is near my size. I can be honest about this. I always, for some reason, need to feel, you know, have some sort of control. I'm not trying to control the person, but I need to feel dominant. And I I'm just being honest. You know, tall, big people do nothing for me because they intimidate me and they make me feel weak. And I came from a weak place. You know, I got tired of being that one that was being abused. So, you know, I feel threatened by, you know, people like that. So, to answer your question, yeah.
Okay. Well, we absolutely appreciate that. We understand. Do you consider it more of a complex? Like, you know, you have a Napoleon complex. I don't think a Napoleon complex, you know, necessarily applies here because you're not challenged with height. You're tall. But have you ever dated someone who is tall, or you just automatically gravitate to men who are small and petite or smaller than you in stature that you can tower over?
Yeah, I find that, you know, and it could be still the same reason, but I do find them more sexually attractive.
Okay.
But I have dated someone tall before. And yes, I fought them as well. And I told you about the story about in the bathroom, and that guy was actually like 6'1", and muscle bound. And I didn't want to date him, but he was persistent. So I said, well, let me try something different. And mm-hmm. It's nothing really different because
right.
I told you the story. So
I want to ask you, where are you today in terms of your mental stability, in your position? Because you have a position, you know, you were once an abuser. And so from what you told me, you've been in a relationship for 5 years now. Are you still abusing men? You know, are you not abusing men? Where are you?
Like I said before, you know, and someone else mentioned that they got past their fear through therapy. I got past my issues with therapy. I'm not going to say that I'm perfect. You know, because I still have I'm a Leo, still got a little bit of, you know, I can take it there sometimes, but I'll never take it to the point putting my hands on another human being.
Right. Has therapy been helpful for you? Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, therapy helps a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, I realize a lot of things. Still, I can't even, and this has been an ongoing thing. We don't talk about much else. I mean, I talk about my relationship in therapy because, you know, that's what has helped me also, you know, but I always resort back to my childhood, and I can never talk about it without crying because I just feel it was so unfair, you know,
right.
That what can you find in a 7-year-old child,
right.
Undeveloped child? That is a monster to take someone's childhood, to take someone's innocence.
Right.
And like I told you before, you know, everybody else outside playing skelly, learning how to ride bikes, and I'm learning how to suck dick.
Right.
There's something terribly wrong with that. Tell you a little short story.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Well, you already know my age, but Planet of the Apes came out in 1972, the original. I went to the movies to see it, but I never saw it. And it took until a couple of years ago for me to ever watch the original Planet of the Apes, because these same abusers asked my grandmother, said, "Oh, we're going to the movies, Miss Mills. Can we take him with us?" And I was homebound. I was scared to go outside. She's like, "Yeah, he needs to get out the house." She never knew him because they always said, "If you tell, we'll kill her." That's all I knew. Soon as I got in the movies and the lights were lowered, my head stayed in his lap the entire movie. So Planet of the Apes was always a reminder. It sounds so trivial, but yet it was like a big thing to me. And it was just recently that I was able to see it.
Right. Devin, my final question for you this evening is, are you in ongoing therapy?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And is therapy a relief for you? And I ask that question because you were very emotional on our program tonight, and we understand that there's still some underlying things there. So I'm asking that in hopes that you're getting the help that you need.
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand, there's so many levels. You know, this it's an onion, you know, and you
right.
just never know what the next layer will bring. It may open up another door in your psyche. You just never know. And I don't want to be caught out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've come a long way, but we never know if it's a short trip back.
Right. Well, Devin, I appreciate you coming on the show tonight. I thank you for your bravery. I thank you for your honesty. And I thank you for being a member. All of us thank you for being a member of Common Ties. Antonio, did you want to join in and say something? It sounds like you're trying to.
I do have one comment, not a question, to say about Devin. You know, first I want to thank you for coming on, but I've actually gotten the opportunity to get to know Devin many, many years back. And, you know, he definitely has been an inspiration and a mentor to me in sharing some of the challenges that he has faced coming up. And not just me, but, you know, a number of youth or LGBT youth. So I definitely thank you for, you know, sharing this with the radio.
You're welcome. And thank you for those words.
Absolutely. And we thank you. We thank you for your bravery tonight. We're going to put Devin back in queue. We're going to see if we have any Twitter questions tonight. Any more Twitter questions for our panel with Ramon?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. Wow, some heavy stuff for us tonight on Common Ties Live. You know, our very, very first serious subject matter show with 24 minutes and counting to go until we close out. This show was titled Domestic Violence and Rape, and we are going to continue the rape aspect next week. We're going to have to create a whole new show for that, which we are prepared to do. Domestic violence is such a heavy topic. I just want to take a 10% check and see how everybody's feeling tonight. DJ, how are you feeling? Are you okay?
Honestly, hearing from Devin,
it's a lot, right?
It was a lot, and I mean, I admit that, like, I'm happy that he's getting the help that he needs. I think that it was so brave of him to come and share, but I find it, I'm just going to leave it at that. I feel for him. And Devin, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and your side of it. And, you know, that it was hard to listen to that. It really was hard to listen to that.
Right. Yeah. I think we all had that little lump in our throat. Antonio, you doing okay? Because I know you've got a special relationship with him. You've known him for quite a while now.
I have. I've gotten to know him. And, you know, a lot of this, I don't know if he explained, a lot of this happened for Devin at a very young age. And I personally know him. I know a lot. He has been through a lot to overcome where he is today. And, you know, who am I to, you know, look and feel any type of way, but it does open my eyes to understand the other side.
Right. Well, I get it. August, how are you feeling tonight? August is quiet all the way down there.
I'm sorry. I had to pick you off of mute.
Okay.
It was just a lot to take in. Devin really got my attention tonight. That was a lot. That was very emotional.
Yeah, that was hard. It was really hard. We want to have VJ join us, our fabulous deep voice Southerner who lives here in the Washington, D.C. area from Birmingham, Alabama, where he hails. He's on the line with us tonight. How are you feeling tonight? What's your initial reaction? You're the last person that we're talking to this evening because we are going to you're our last person that has had an experience with domestic violence. After we talk to you, we're going to open the phone lines up, so we're going to talk to some other people and just kind of get initial reactions. But what's your initial reaction tonight hearing all of these incredible stories on Common Ties Live?
Well, first, I'd like to tell DJ, you know, as I stated in the room, it is never okay for somebody to put their hands on you. I come from, I guess, the history of domestic violence, and I kind of come from it on a standpoint of I wasn't looking for somebody to love me better than myself because I grew up in a household that taught me how to love. I had a mother who taught me how to keep my head high. I had a father who taught me how to be a man and be humble at the same time. I think me, as my grandmother would say, a young grasshopper, I was looking for love and didn't know exactly what real love was, expecting it from another person. And I met this guy when I was a young grasshopper. And as everybody know, I refer to myself as the good guy. I'm one of the good guys. So I had a taste for bad boys. And as Devin was stating, you know, I met this guy who had somewhat of a similar past. He didn't have a good relationship with his father or his mother. His grandmother raised him. So, you know, he didn't really know how to love and didn't know what real love was. And my first altercation, we got into a little petty-ass argument. It was over something that was pretty much our emotional balance was off for some odd reason. He wanted to play with me, and I wasn't in the mood. And he went to touch me, and I told him, don't bother me right now. I didn't feel too good, and he got upset. And me, I have to work on respecting other people's boundaries and vice versa. You know, there's boundaries that you shouldn't cross. And I kind of got a little forceful. And, you know, as Devin stated, you know, sometimes guys, they don't want to get into all of that yap yap. And he turned around and he slapped me. And my first initial thought was like, whoa, like you hit me, yo. Like, what's going on? Chill out. And, you know, I'm a guy that's not really, you know, timid. But I'm going to stand my ground, and the last thing I'm going to do is hit my lover. So, you know, I initially went to grab him and try to restrain him, and that's another thing you don't want to do. You don't want to restrain a person. So he continued to tussle with me a little bit, and we had company over. And the friend of ours, they were kind of hysterical because they never saw us in that environment. And I was also hysterical, being young and never experiencing a domestic situation. You know, I didn't know how to react. So after I was able to break away from him, I went to the bathroom for a second to try to get my composure because we were also at his grandmother's house. And they were all on the porch and everything. And I went in the bathroom and I saw my face, and yeah, it was an emotional moment for me. It was kind of one of those, like, damn, like, yo, like, I'm going through this shit, you know? And before I can get out the bathroom good enough, he was already outside of the bathroom in the hallway crying. He was on his knees. He was, you know, kind of shocked he did it himself. And he was trying to beg and plead, you know, please don't go. I won't do it no more and blah, blah, blah. And at that time, you know, I kind of went with it. And
I think we may have lost VJ. All right, VJ, are you still on with us? Okay, we can hear you now. I think you stepped out for a moment. Right. We can hear you now.
But yeah, I don't know if you heard that when I was in the bathroom, he actually came to the opposite side of the bathroom, and he was a little upset. And he, you know, he was crying and pleading his case pretty much to, you know, he was sorry, and he didn't want me to go. So I kind of.
Okay, I think BJ's still having some technical difficulty at this moment. We're going to give him a moment to come back on. Question of the night is, does anger cause abuse? We are here. Are you on a cell phone talking to us?
Yeah, I don't know if my headset probably has.
Okay.
I can hear. Yeah, I can hear you fine. Yeah, you said.
All right. I don't know. This is my third time saying it, but our little first incident, you know, I went into the bathroom to kind of get myself together, and he was outside of the restroom crying and upset. He wanted to, you know, apologize and say that everything would be okay, and I went with it. So a few times after that, we got into some more altercations, and they escalated each time. you know, the second time we got into an altercation, it was very physical. I still have a bite mark on my shoulder, kind of like a tattoo right now as a reminder to this day. And put a knife to my neck as well and kind of threatened for me to shut up and, you know, what have you. And the third time it happened, we were in a car, kind of somewhat similar to what DJ was mentioning earlier. So when I heard him mention that, it kind of brought me back to my situation, because that night we got into an argument that was kind of over me hanging out with his ex. And he was also possessive, young, possessive, and, you know, didn't know how to love, and the guy was always lying. And I was kind of green. I was new to the area, or to the lifestyle per se. And, you know, me and his ex had became friends. And at that time, I really didn't know the guidelines as far as we're making friends. So
mm-hmm. I'm gonna speed you up a little bit, because I know that within this story, go into the aspect of the altercation. What happened within the altercation?
Oh, within the altercation? Oh, well, I had just got my hair freshly done. It was celebration time, and around the holidays and everything, and we got into a little altercation pretty much that led to him snatching me by my braids, the back of my braids, and slamming on my head into the dashboard. And that pretty much is what struck it off. And this was in a car. This was in a car that was actually in motion. So we kind of got it.
Were you able to get away from him, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I got away from him. I mean, that was kind of at that moment, because it had been over a time span, and I was learning what it was that I wasn't going to tolerate. And so at that moment, I was like, it was quitting time. I threw my towel in. I got away from him. I ran to some neighbors because we were in the car, and I had one of the neighbors call the police.
Mm-hmm. And where are you now in terms of that experience? Have you had any more relationships where you experienced domestic violence of this magnitude, or?
Not to this magnitude. Now, I do know when me and you were talking sometime last week or whatever, you know, on domestic violence on both a physical and a verbal standpoint, you know, I learned something about myself that was, you know, pretty much good. Sometimes, you know, you just have to walk away. You don't always have to be so forceful. And me, I'm a person, I deserve and demand respect, and I'm a hard lover. And I don't like to sweep anything under the rug. I like to get the shit over and done with. So, you know, you have some people that like to rather just pop and let it die down. But, you know, sometimes I'm not like that. So, yeah. But as far as to that degree, absolutely not. I won't let it even get that far.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, you are one of the good guys. So, you know, we don't want to ever let it get that far. We are... Exactly. We are about a little under 13 minutes until the end of show. We're going to put you back in queue, BJ. We're going to open the phone lines up to some of the callers. Thank you so much for calling in tonight, and we'll talk to you soon. We're going to open up the phone lines to some other callers, because the final question of the hour is, does anger cause abuse? Ramon actually just posted that in the group. And we want to just know from you, does anger cause abuse? So we're going to go down. Let's see where we're going to go. A lot of different people on the phone with us tonight. We have a caller calling from the New Jersey area, 973 area code. Last four digits of your number is 6094. New Jersey, you are on the air with us tonight. Last four digits, 6094. Does anger cause abuse? Caller, are you with us? Hello? I think we might have lost that caller. Let's go down to 305. This might be our love bug, Rico, at 305, last four digits, 7147. Is this our love, Rico, calling from Miami? Caller in Miami, are you on the line? Actually, you know what? I'm hitting wrong buttons over here, guys. I'm sorry. Now I have Rico. I was like, I didn't hear that voice. So Rico, you are on the line with us. How are you this evening, sweetheart?
I'm good. I can't complain. This is a long, busy work day, but I'm here.
Yeah. And then you join us on the phone lines tonight with this very heavy conversation. So does anger cause abuse, Rico? Can you talk to us about that?
I can say it's probably a contributory factor to abuse. I wouldn't say that it's solely a reason for abuse. There definitely would have to be some other things that play a role that kind of ties in with anger, I would say.
Right.
I mean, my experiences have been quite similar to some of what the gentlemen have shared tonight. None that I would be and or am open at this particular point in time to go into,
right,
because it's such is the history of my life. So nothing,
right,
that I like harp on or anything along those lines, but by all means, it has been a means for me to share as a testimony to help others at the appointed time, of course. But yeah, anger plays a role is what I would say. But again, as a sole factor, I wouldn't say that it would just be it. There has to be something that triggers it.
Right. DJ, how do you feel about that question? Does anger cause abuse?
In my opinion, I don't think that, like Rico just stated, I don't think that anger is the sole issue that leads to, or the sole fuel for an abuser to strike another person. I'm not a therapist. I have never, I took one psych class in college. I can't diagnose something like this. Personally, I just feel like it's something more than anger.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Well, Rico, we thank you for calling in tonight. We thank you for listening. We're going to put you back in queue. We're going to take another caller at this time, calling out of the 856 area code. Last digits of your number is 3856. 3856 area code 3856. You're on the air. How are you? Who are we talking to tonight? Caller, are you there? We can hear you, caller.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah.
You're on the air with us. Who are we talking to?
Well, this is Mark Wilson, out of Philadelphia.
Hey, Mark.
Hey,
so
Mark.
Perfect. So Mark was actually about to get his PhD very soon. So Mark, you're a smart guy. Talk to us a little bit about this anger cause abuse.
I think that when it comes to abuse, it's not necessarily anger. It's an old thing that people say, hurt people hurt people. So I think,
right,
it has a lot to do more so with pain than,
right,
than with anger.
Mm-hmm.
When people are oppressed and they have been feeling hurt, or that there's a lot of situations where people are in where they feel like they're in a lot of pain, I think it kind of forces people to lash out. So I think that's the thing that kind of maybe will become the, I'm sorry, it's late, I'm tired. That kind of sets things in motion. So I think that for me, and based on a lot of observations and that I've had with clients and my experience and just in the field, I've realized that it's the pain that people feel that kind of then will produce what we see in terms of people being abusive, and that,
mm-hmm,
that anger kind of comes from that place of I'm feeling hurt and I'm in pain.
Right. Okay. Antonio, question,
yeah,
that we're asking everybody tonight. Does anger cause abuse?
I'm not going to say anger solely causes abuse. I think it's a mixture of, I think I think Marcus posted in the group as well, a mixture of abuse, control. I mean, there can be so many factors.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's just one. I think it could be a person-to-person base. I don't think that it's just one specific reason.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking on our Common Ties Facebook page. Marcus Walker should call back in because he just said control causes abuse, which is very interesting. I'd love for us to expound on that theory. I got to say thank you, Mark, for staying up so late and hanging out with us. We're going to put you back in queue. Such a great topic tonight. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show. I want to go to another caller. Let's see who we can get on the line to chat with us. So many callers to choose from. So we're going to go to caller calling what looks like possibly the Maryland area. 443 area code, last four digits is 6296. Caller, 6296, 443 area code. You're on the air. How are you this evening?
What's up, guys? It's Tanze.
Hey, Tanze. How are you?
Hi, Tanze.
Hello, hello.
So, Tanze, very heavy show tonight. And the question of the evening before we depart, we've got about five minutes to go before we close this show. Does anger cause abuse?
I believe it does.
Okay. And can you expound on that?
And I say that, because I'm a product of abuse. So let me finish real quick because somebody asked earlier. Tops can be abused as well. I was in a relationship with someone that had anger issues, and I was the top in the relationship. His anger issues came from the sudden death of his mother. She wasn't sick or anything. She just died. And as a direct result of that, after we buried her, I experienced abuse for 2 years. He became very angry all the time. When I would go to work, he was angry because he felt that by me being absent from him throughout the day, he feared that the same thing was going to happen to me that happened to his mother.
Wow.
And I tried to...
Are you still with us, Tom?
Yeah, I'm still here. I tried to deal with the situation as long as I could. I only could do 2 years after she died. And it became very violent. He tried to stab me. He cut me across my face from my left temple to the corner of my mouth. And I know it was all out of anger for the loss of his mother because he blamed God and then he blamed himself because he wasn't there because his mother lived in a different state. He wasn't there to be with her on a daily basis. So he took that anger and hatred that he started having for God out on me because he thought I was going to die or just up and leave him when we weren't in each other's presence. So anger plays a big part into it.
Wow. Well, Tanze, I thank you for calling in tonight, and we thank you for supporting our show. We're going to put you back in queue. Have a good night all the way out there in Maryland. we're almost at a minute and 30 seconds left to go, and we just got to just thank everybody for calling in. You know, shows like this are you know, we really, really want to show people in our community that it's just not about, you know, the parties and, you know, and thotting around and some of, you know, folks in the group and other people who, you know, do in our gay community. And it's just not about the pageantry of homosexuality. It's about these critical elements. Got to send a shout out to Christian, who is always putting such insightful in the group about our community. He put some great stuff about domestic violence and rape. We're going to continue this conversation next week. We were actually doing a different show, but we're going to have a rape show next week because the topic of rape is so epic. So please inbox us if you've ever had an experience with rape or you've been sexually assaulted. The conversation continues into rape next week, Monday. We hope that you will join us. And as we say on every show, we want to make sure that you're wrapping it up, that you're practicing safe sex. Got to send a special shout out to DJ Hunter for being so brave and telling your story tonight. We love you. We thank you. Yeah. We appreciate you. Antonio Driver, all the way in Pittsburgh. Leo Rain in North Carolina. Ramon Gaddis in South Jersey. I'm Tristan Keir. We thank you so much for listening. And until next time, have a good night.
We love you guys.
Yeah. Love you, baby.